4 and 5 probably is how I would rank them. And one, of course, I consider it the best canon, because it's, well, not the best, but it sets up the whole storyline.
Yeah.
And from there, it kind of, 2 dipped off to just a weird area. 3 was okay, but 4 introduced a new puppet master and stuff, and it got cool.
You want to talk about it?
We can wait.
I mean, we're here. You already started talking about it. So.
Oh, we were just making conversation.
All right, we'll talk about it in the next
one. Yeah, we got plenty to talk about.
Okay, everybody, welcome to episode 99 of the Scary Dad Podcast. It is September 3rd, and we're talking about the Book of Revelations, Part 2. So last week we introduced the Book of Revelations, the controversial final book of the Bible that is considered canon by some and not canon by others, but it's in there, and there's all kinds of references in pop culture and in politics and just basic daily life that discusses potential
signs of the apocalypse.
Right.
And you know what's funny is, you know, when you think about it, we talked about this before, as scary and, you know, interesting as the Book of Revelations is, there's not really that many movies that are based upon it. You know, This Is the End was the last big movie that came out that was based on the Book of Revelations. But other than that, people kind of avoid that subject.
They do. And there's a couple of reasons why, I think. We'll get into it whenever we get into the meat of the show. Anyway, thank you for listening to the Scary Dad Podcast, our 99th episode. So I just had a conversation with the wife. It's a question for you. The audience probably has an opinion, but they'll be hearing it by the time you hear this, we will have already made our decision. But you realize episode 102 is our 2-year anniversary.
Really? I did not realize.
Actually 104.
I did not realize.
52
that.
And 52. 104. So we've got a 2-year anniversary coming up in just a couple weeks. So do we make the big celebration on episode 100, or do we wait a little bit and just like really cram it for our 2-year anniversary? We're going to discuss that. We'll still have something really cool for episode 100.
Well, considering the fact we've done so many metas to where we're actually over 100 at this
point,
that's true. We may be able to wait till the 2-year anniversary. So we'll figure it out.
So, without further ado, Mr. Gomez.
First, the old business.
All right. On this date in 301, San Marino, one of the smallest nations and the oldest republic still in existence, was founded by Saint Marino.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It's like, but hey man, he planted his flag and it's still flying. So good on you, 1700 years. Or, yeah. All right. 1189, Richard I, also known as the Lionheart, was crowned king in Westminster. In 1873, the American Revolutionary War ends with the signing of the Treaty of Paris. There will be a part 2, but 1873, so there we go. All right, 1941, Carl Freitag experiments with the Cyclone B gas in Auschwitz on Soviet POWs. Ooh. He's the one that basically was like, hey, we could use this stuff for execution, and in pure bureaucratic style got himself some funding to give it a shot and see what happened.
666 group of people there, man.
And you know Cyclone B was created and distributed by Bayer?
Yeah, I have heard that before.
And you know, Bayer just bought Monsanto. And because, for those of you who are maybe not familiar with Monsanto is the world's largest chemical company. Yeah. They call themselves an agricultural and seed company, but in reality, they're a chemical company. Yeah. They create all of the fertilizers, not fertilizers, but they
pesticides,
herbicides, and they distribute them all over the world.
They just got sued big time because of Roundup. They just
right.
lost a nice little chunk of change.
And they've got a bad name because they're such a big conglomerate and they've got so many feelers into so many industries that they're basically untouchable. And one of the reasons that they're so hated is they do a whole lot with like genetically modified crops and stuff like that. Well, they've got a situation where basically, like, say if you're a farmer and you're not using their specially treated corn. So the way that it works is this. They develop a pesticide or an herbicide. Herbicide kills the plant. So then they develop a plant that is resistant to the herbicide. Then they sell you that treated seed.
So you have to use their herbicide.
So that you use their herbicide. Well, what happens is this thing called wind and pollination. And if their patented seed pollinates your unpatented corn and they find out about it, even though it happened naturally, you have to pay them a royalty
right.
for using their product. So there's all kinds of just bad stuff. And they're pretty badly hated. So Bayer bought Monsanto recently in one of the largest deals in history. And Bayer, the creator and distributor of Zyklon B, decided they're going to scrub the name Monsanto from everything because of all its bad press.
Yeah, PR.
How crazy is that? Anyway, that's a little aside, but it's an interesting thing. And on this date in 1961 in Sweden, all traffic switches from the left to the right. It was apparently one of the largest infrastructure projects in the history of the nation. Where basically what they did was, and this is before the internet and stuff, but basically at this certain hour of the day, everybody had to stop and pull over to the side of the road, stop their cars. Then from this time to this time, they had to move over to the other side of the road. And then they could only drive like 10 miles an hour for a certain period of time. So everybody got used to it. And, but yeah, we're going to switch the traffic now. Interestingly enough, they did it because they wanted to reduce the number of accidents that were happening. So actually it worked for a short period of time, but probably because everybody was just being very cautious yeah. about driving on the wrong side of the road. But then accidents just kind of trickled
up to where it was.
Yeah. So, all right. Notable births on this date in 1875. Ferdinand Porsche, inventor of the red supercars. they make other colors, but would you ever buy a Porsche that wasn't red? I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't buy a yellow one for sure. I never dug the yellow Porsches. They were popular for a little while.
All right, and this date in 1923, Mort Walker, the cartoonist for Beetle Bailey.
I used to love that cartoon, that comic strip when I was a kid.
Long,
I miss
long
reading
running.
The funnies, man. I miss those days. On Sunday, you'd have the big color one that would come out.
Yeah,
and
I think I think it's our old reprints these days. 1929, gangster Whitey Bulger killed lots of folks.
Yep.
Or at least had a lot of folks killed. This date, 1965, Mr. Tiger Blood, Charlie Sheen was born.
he's dropped off a little bit.
Recently. And 1986, snowboard champion Shaun White.
Carrot top of the slopes.
All right, notable deaths this date in 1658, Oliver Cromwell, protector of the people. 1970, sporting great Vince Lombardi. And in 2012, we lost Michael Clark Duncan. Heart attack.
Yeah, he was cool. I liked him a lot. Seemed like a very good guy.
You know who he was married to?
Well, he almost married Omarosa.
Yeah, he almost married Omarosa.
They were engaged.
That's nuts. It's like weird, but...
Because
you know.
There was some stink at the time because they were pretty close to getting married. So she kind of wanted a widow's cut, I guess you could say. And the family kind of fought her on that. Understandable.
Yeah, I would think. not to quote Kanye, but we want prenup.
It was so funny. I was actually looking a little while ago. I was on LinkedIn. It's almost embarrassing to say now that I actually go on LinkedIn daily. But a buddy of mine who's a financial advisor posted this thing where apparently, and I'm at the point where I hate the word millennials, but the new thing with millennials is making sure you have a prenup before you get married, like no matter what their income is. And he was saying, it's not the most romantic thing, but it's actually pretty sound advice. Let's go ahead and get this taken care of early on.
That's one of those things, man. You just never know. Well, that is it for old business.
Okay.
So let's take a little break, and we will be back with the new.
All right.
Did you ever wonder what it would be like to be one of the last people on Earth?
We're talking ghost town!
Who would you see?
There's nobody. I mean, there's nobody.
What would you do?
Hey, I'm sorry if the end of the world makes me a little nervous.
Where would you go?
The stars are up in!
Well, get ready to find out, because the comet is coming into your orbit.
The legal drinking age is now 10, but you will need ID. Let's be real.
It's the night of the comet.
What do you give me if I come back?
Texas.
Night of the Comet.
I'll be taking requests from all you teenage comet zombies.
The night the teenagers ruled the world.
Yeah!
Night of the Comet.
The burden of civilization is on us.
Fiction, isn't it?
And we're back.
Yes. You know, we're watching Clash of the Titans in the background, and I was, we were talking about skydiving earlier on Facebook, and I sent a clip of my skydiving video from back in the day to Andy, and he actually did a screenshot of how large my nose gets as I'm free falling at 120 miles per hour, and actually looked like Calibus, because it's like I put my face in the exact position where the wind is going right up the nostrils, and it just inflates to the side. It does this hook. It's the weirdest looking thing, dude.
That's awesome.
My kids used to laugh at that video so hard because my cheeks, of course, start flapping and stuff. It's hard to look pretty when you're skydiving.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you smile, I'm smiling like crazy, but my face was contorted in some. It looked like Elastic Man.
Man, I knew this guy. We run into each other from time to time. We were never close, but we were just like, we had a class together in college, and this dude named Lance. And so, years and years ago, my sister and I lived in this house, and it was like a party house. And people just show up and party. And there would be oftentimes, there'd be like 40, 50 people in the house.
It was like my old apartment.
And my sister and I would look at each other and be like, do you know any of these people?
The same thing.
And like, no. Well, one time he came over with somebody for some reason, like he was friend of a friend of him, like I just happened to know him, so I'm like, hey, what's going on? And he had just gotten real into skydiving, and he was working at a skydiving place, and he was like packing chutes and stuff, and he had a couple of videos, and he threw them on, and people were watching different like skydiving videos, and it was cool. Well, then I didn't see him again for like a year, and one day I walk into the coffee shop, and who do I see but this guy Lance? And Lance has been destroyed. He's on crutches. He has lost probably 60, 70 pounds. His face is all jacked up. He's got scars. So, of course, the first thing that comes to mind is
skydiving.
And I'm like, dude, you know, like, how are you? And I don't know, like, what happened? It's like, no, it wasn't skydiving. It was a motorcycle. He's on a motorcycle and somebody hit him. I'm like, oh God. He's like, yeah, I probably would have done better if skydiving. It's like, there's nothing you can do when somebody hits you with a car.
Motorcycles are rough, dude. It's dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know, it, a buddy of mine was, he got caught, he's on his motorcycle, David Munderland, and he was behind an 18 wheeler and got caught in the draft. He went to pass 18 wheeler and got caught. He was kind of drafting behind it and went to go around it. It pulled him back in and dropped him. He broke both his arms. I'll never forget. We were out at this club called the Kingfish one night, and he walks in with he's got both his arms in cast and stuff. I'm like, dude, this gotta suck, bro. He goes, yeah, he says, the worst part is my girlfriend has to wipe my ass for me when I take a shit.
Man.
Okay. Well, it's time for that part of the program.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. I do appreciate that. Okay. You know, we've been talking about the Child's Play remake as of late. Well, Christina Lees, who was at Texas Frightmare Weekend, she was in Child's Play 2. She was asked recently in an interview what she thought about the remake, and she didn't hold back at all. She immediately proclaimed, "I think it's an unbelievably huge dick move. I think it's a douche move, absolutely. I don't know why they would fuck with a healthy franchise to make a competing franchise with an existing and, like you said, healthy, robust franchise is super douchey. And nobody from the original franchise is involved. They're not going to have Brad Dourif. They're not going to have Don. They're not going to have any of the people from the original movies. The doll's going to be artificial intelligence doll that goes haywire, so it's not going to have the whole element of the serial killer possessing it. So it's not going to be really a Chucky film. So I don't know why they're just taking the title and stealing it and mucking up the water." So yeah, she's not too happy about it at all.
That's pretty much exactly what we said about
that. Yeah.
kind of, what's the point?
Did you hear about the lady that fell off the cruise ship recently?
Weren't there two of them?
Well, this was the one that was in off the coast of Croatia. But this British woman falls off a cruise ship. She was able to tread water for 10 hours. While till she was finally rescued. And what I found funny about it is she sang to herself to stay awake. And do you know what song she kept singing over and over again? "Staying alive, staying alive, staying alive."
That's valid.
I just thought that was interesting. Okay, we've talked about how fan bases can get kind of crazy whenever someone gets announced for something. It's happened again, dude. Ruby Rose, I don't know if you heard about her, but
that was ridiculous.
She's been cast as the upcoming Batwoman, who happens to be a lesbian character. Now, Ruby Rose is a lesbian, an out lesbian in Hollywood. And what's crazy is she's dropped off social media because it got so bad, but she was being harassed by people that felt as though she was the wrong lesbian to play Batwoman.
She's not gay enough.
Yeah.
Or her gender identification was like fluid, and so therefore she's not a identifying as female, as a gay female. She's identifying as something other than that. So therefore she doesn't count, because that's what Batwoman is.
Right. It's crazy.
Yeah, she wasn't getting attacked by the religious right.
She's getting attacked by her own community.
Is insane.
Yeah, it is nuts. Instead of celebrating the fact that she's been cast in the role,
I felt bad because I saw that. It was just like a clip of an interview. She was on some late night show, and they asked her about it, and she was so excited. I mean, as an actor,
and a lot of people were happy for her.
Yeah, well, I was. You know, it's like I've never been the hugest Batwoman fan, but you know, she looks the part.
Yeah, she does. She looks perfect.
And if you know Batwoman. Batwoman has like long red hair, but it's actually part of her costume. In reality, she gets home, she takes that off, and she's got like close crop, like kind of short hair.
Right.
So she looks very much like Ruby Rose would look. Like, that's right. What Batwoman would look like. And really, whenever you're talking about Hollywood, the way you look is pretty much what matters. Like, how well you can act it. But if you look the part, that's, especially with a superhero, that's a good chunk of it.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, you're wearing a mask.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Dateline, Larimer, Australia, in the Northern Territory. Population, 11. It was 12. Until one evening, a gentleman named Paddy Moriarty went missing. What's hilarious about this is, within this town of now 11 people, everybody's accusing everybody else of killing this person. It is one of the funniest articles you will read in a long time. He apparently went out one night, got drunk at the Pink Panther. It's the only bar in the town. It's in a little hotel they have there. And he went for a walk home and was never seen again. So the cops have come to try to investigate. Everybody's pointing at everybody else. there's one person that owns a little restaurant where they have a bunch of crocodiles in the back. They say that he fed the body to his crocodiles. There's another neighbor that lives across the street from him that they had a feud going on. They're saying that woman killed him. It's the funniest story you've ever read, dude. So you can't try to look it up, the story of Patty Moriarty, and learn a little bit more about that. Okay, did you hear about the Satanic Temple?
I did.
Up in Arkansas. They went ahead. How do you pronounce Baphomet? Is it Baphomet?
Baphomet.
They brought that huge statue of Baphomet out. It was funny because there's little, it reminds me, there's this Jesus portrait where he's sitting down and there's a bunch of little children around him. It's pretty much that, but with a satanic demon that's sitting on the throne. They decided to go ahead and bring their own statue down to the town square and see what would happen. What can you do?
You know, that's one of those things that's going to be an interesting fight. I read an article about this whenever they first proposed it, like 2 or 3 years ago. The whole Ten Commandments issue, and the first amendment considerations and everything. But the way this article was placed, the way the article was saying that your First Amendment and your religious freedoms discussion is not really the discussion. Mm-hmm. What we're discussing here, whether you like it or not, whether you're a complete 100% fundamentalist or if you're a complete 100% atheist, the relevance is that the Judeo-Christian ethic, as it has contributed to the structure of society, it's supposed to be an ideal. It's supposed to represent the highest ideal that man could possibly reach, to become one with the infinite. And so if you are putting up symbols that are at their core and at their heart meant to symbolize reaching the highest ideal, then placing up the opposite in the exact same spot, It's not really, like, philosophically it's unsound. Like, legally it makes perfect sense. But philosophically, you're just kind of being a dick.
Yeah.
You know?
Just trying to be an asshole.
You're just trying to get your way. And, you know, it's like, I don't take sides in these things. I just watch them happen. But every now and then you hear commentary because you got to get away from the news and the sound bites and all the Twitterverse going back and forth about stuff and realizing, like, yeah, that's kind of a good point. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you're building a pyramid and you're gonna cap it with a gold stone and you're like, this is the highest of the high, then you got somebody else that's like, well, we're gonna dig a hole and go the opposite direction. It's like, well, okay, but what purpose does that serve?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Other than getting you on the news.
My thing is, there's no denying the fact that the founding fathers, that our judicial system is based off of Judeo-Christian principles. And the Ten Commandments is just kind of a homage to what that's based off of. It doesn't necessarily do with religion, but you can't deny the fact that our country was established on those principles.
Right.
There's no way you could deny that.
Well, and it's a principles thing because most of the founding fathers were deists. They weren't even true Christians,
right,
as things go. But not to get real deep into it, but it's one of those things, like, because I just read all this and listen to podcasts and all this deep stuff for whatever reason. I'm a glutton for punishment. I don't listen to the sports radio. I listen to, like, biblical lectures and stuff like that. It points out that when Moses was given the Ten Commandments, that he had already been a leader and a judge and a lawyer of these people for, like, decades. Mm-hmm. When the law was revealed, he was codifying what actually worked to kind of keep the people from fighting each other.
Yeah.
You're trying to keep a nation without a solid, like, they've got a stable culture, but they don't have a home. Mm-hmm. So you want to keep your people together and but they can't be fighting. So, okay, first of all, we're not going to have a disparity in religions. So, like, commandment number one, I'm your only God. You can't have other ones.
Right.
okay, you're like, well, that's dumb. Well, actually, no, because look what's happening now. People are fighting about it. Mm-hmm. If you want people not to fight, you say, hey.
You limit their choices.
You limit their choices. Okay? Don't fuck your neighbor's wife. That's really, really good thing to say. Like, that's not a bad idea for a rule. Don't kill each other. Don't lie. Don't cheat. Don't steal. You know? Yeah. Like, all of the things in the Ten Commandments, for the most part, make perfect sense for keeping a society together and unified logically. Now, whether it was revealed by God or not, that remains to be discussed, and you can believe what you want to believe. But whenever you actually read the tenets of the Ten Commandments, you're like, that kind of makes sense in a judicial sense for sure. Whereas the satanic Bible, I think the first line is, do what thou wilt, that shall be the whole of the law. So
anarchy,
do whatever you
baby.
Want.
Yeah, anarchy.
Just do whatever you want. So that is a conflicting thing.
Right. Okay, next up, try to get through these. As you know, as I'm sure you know, Friday the 13th was filmed at Camp Nobi Mosco. It's still active as a Boy Scouts camp in Hardwick, New Jersey. The actual Camp Crystal Lake campgrounds are off limits normally to the public, except for those rare occasions where they offer visits. So this year, on Friday, October 10th and Saturday, October 13th, tickets are up right now for an experience where you can go and spend the night over at the original Camp Crystal Lake where the movie was filmed. Adrian King, original Friday the 13th star, will be in attendance. And tickets are up and available right now if you want to try to bid on them for some VIP packages overnight or for just single-day trips. So
they're quite expensive.
Yes. Yeah, they normally do a lottery for the tickets to where you're not guaranteed a chance that you're going to get some, but they actually have some that they're going to be...
I was this close to hitting the buy button. It was one of those things that I was just like, ooh. They did some renovations on some of the cabins and buildings there. And whenever they tore out the decks to build the new ones, they took all that wood and they made things out of them. So, some of them were big, like plaques and stuff. But you can buy, a set of dice that was cut from the deck. You know, it's all, it's like all of this stuff was in the movie. But you can get a pair of dice that was, cut from the planks of the deck. It was, $40, though. And I'm like, $40 for a pair of dice? Damn. That's a lot.
Are you going to try to go see Ari when he comes to Houston?
I'm going to try to, yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's him and not Tyler Mane, he was Halloween. The guy from the reboot. He's my last two Jasons.
Okay.
I'll remember his name.
I can't remember his name, but I know what you mean. I know who you're talking about. That's it for new business.
Well, actually, I wanted to touch on something real quick.
Yeah.
Because a couple weeks ago, we talked about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
And since we talked about it, new stuff has come to light about the pedophile themed
jokes
party.
Oh, yes. Yeah, with the costumes and everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
And at the same time, so there was so much of a backlash that Disney actually brought him in to discuss potentially. I don't know if Disney brought him in to discuss it, but you remember when Gunn was fired, he didn't fight.
Mm-hmm.
He made his statement.
He took his medicine, yeah.
Very short and sweet, and he didn't. He kind of disappeared. It was the public that did the backlash. It was the cast and the crew and everybody that knew him from work. I just want to go on record as saying I'm pretty sure that there's something that's not being revealed at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That they know something or something's being...
There may be more to it.
There might be more to it. I can forgive a provocateur for saying stupid stuff 10 years ago. I mean, that's ridiculous. If you say something stupid 10 years ago and you get fired for it 10 years later... But I have to say that there's probably something else that we're just not being told, because with such a backlash and Disney actually relented and kind of looked back over their notes, so to speak,
yeah,
and didn't bring him back on. So, and then some kind of more stuff has come to light. So I don't want anybody to think you're defending this guy and he turned out to be a pedophile. It's like, oh, no. We're defending free speech.
Yes.
We're not defending the other.
Yeah.
So
well, a lot of times,
but the way that our episodes drop and when the news actually hits, it was like the day our episode discussing it dropped was
these
the day
things
that
came
this,
to light.
The, like 2 or 3 days later, that stuff came to light, and it was like, ooh, don't want anybody going like, man, the scary dad guys are are sympathetic to a weirdo. I'm like, nope, not me.
But things happen sometimes where I've been guilty of it. In my personal life with friends of mine, where our initial gut reaction to anything negative about someone that we care about or, you know, we admire is to come to their defense.
Of course. That's the way it should
and
be.
You always, you tend to believe them before you believe anything else. And I'll give you a great example. I love this story so much. I used to take this fishing trip down to Biloxi, Mississippi every year with a group of friends of mine. And we'd stay one night at this casino called the Beau Rivage, and the next day we'd leave on the boats to go fishing. And we're there one night for the Beau Rivage trip. One of my friends got incredibly drunk, like stupid drunk, and he didn't want to finish partying. And at one point I saw him walking with a couple of young ladies through the casino. So me and my buddy Scott, another Scott, we decided to go ahead, gamble a little bit more, then called it the night, went to bed. Next thing I know, the phone rings, and it's the lobby saying, we need you to come downstairs for your friend. I'm not going to say his name. So we go downstairs, and I'm being told by the police that he said that he was kidnapped by gunpoint from the hotel, taken into a car, driven out in the middle of the sticks outside of Biloxi. Gun to his head, they stole his watch, they stole his wallet, stole all his money, and left him there. He went to somebody's house to call the police, and the police brought him back to the hotel. So I'm in there, and I'm going off on everybody. I'm like, I know you have to have cameras. This is a casino. You have to have cameras where you saw what happened. Why are we just standing around here? Well, come to find out, they did have cameras, and they knew he was lying his ass off.
Oh, damn.
He had left with a couple of prostitutes on his own accord with no gun involved. But he had to change the story for his wife's sake. So needless to say, that after I made an ass out of myself defending this bastard, the cops pulled me aside and said, we actually know exactly what happened. We're just trying to get him to admit it instead of lying to us. And the next day, me and Scott had to go pick him up from the drunk tank because they arrested him that night and brought him over there. And he didn't go fishing.
No kidding.
Because it got to the point where his wife had called him, and I talked to her and said, you know, he'd been kidnapped and all this other shit, and it was
all lies.
Yeah, he had to go home and try to fix all that up. So, yeah, we tend to jump to the defense of people that we have.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at the thing that's coming out with Dario Argento's daughter right now. That's going to get ugly.
Yeah.
That's going to get really ugly.
Thing is, I mean, I don't disbelieve her for what happened to her, but it's kind of one of those things like, how public do you want to be whenever you got skeletons in your own closet?
Yeah. How
especially these days.
How big of a noise you want to make? Because people will find out.
Anyway, that was just a little aside for the new business.
Yep. We'll take a break.
Take a break. We'll come right back.
Man on Earth lives in a fortress.
What day is it anyway? Monday?
The hell it is. It's Sunday.
Sunday I always dress for dinner.
Discovered check. How does that grab you, Caesar?
The last man on Earth always carries an automatic weapon. The last man on Earth is hunting. Because the last man on Earth is not alone.
Ah! mother. Don't turn, just stand. When I want you to turn, I'll turn you on or off, up or around. I'll turn you. Now cool it. Now put your hands out. Out. Way out. About shoulder high. I like to go crucify you, baby. You got any more questions, fat head?
My name's Robert.
Your name's Mud.
God, I forgot to keep the fuel up in the generator. They'll be into the garage!
Is this not the place where all the dead were burned? Get those boats off!
Get into it.
I think so. Okay, so we did the introduction to Book of Revelations last week, kind of went through the entire thing, laid out the plan, I guess you could say, of what it draws out. Now we're going to talk about just in life, in society, how it tends to play out. One of the things we were going to talk about were conspiracy theories with it. The first one that comes to mind always is the part where they talk about the Mark of the Beast.
Right.
That's one of the ones that I hear brought up the most when it comes to whether it be different technologies that pop up or whatever that people compare to the Mark of the Beast.
Absolutely. Well, one thing I wanted to touch on before we get deep into it was I mentioned at the end of last episode, we went through the entire chronology of the Book of Revelation right up to the end and noticed at the end, like, it never mentioned the rapture.
Yeah.
Which is something that's a big part of whenever people talk about the Revelation and the Tribulation, the rapture's in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And it mentions a couple times where, like, the 144,000 faithful will be marked, and then everybody else has to fend for themselves. So I looked it up, and in Revelation, there is no mention of the rapture itself. It actually comes from Thessalonians, which is a previous book.
Okay.
And the Bible is not specific about the rapture. It basically says that there will be a reaping of the faithful, but it doesn't say specifically how, when, or whether it's a corporal reaping, or just a you'll be reunited with God in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say specifically what that is, and so in looking up, you know, the rapture, basically there's three groups. There's three schools of thought. There's the pre-tribulationists that assume, that believe that the rapture will occur before the tribulations, before the angels start pouring out their bowls and blowing their horns. All of the faithful will be called up to heaven, and then all those that are left are going to have to deal with
what's behind, all the what's chaos. Behind. Right.
Then there are the post-tribulationists that assume that it'll happen either during the tribulation at some point or after. But nothing, there again, there's nothing specific that says, okay, well, first this, then that, then this thing, and then something else. And then there's a third school called the preterism, that basically the entire Book of Revelations happened in 70 AD when Rome destroyed Jerusalem and persecuted the Jews and kind of just shook Christendom to the core.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not nice about it. And so all of these, you know, so a lot of the criticism of Revelation in, I don't want to say the church, because I don't know what the church with the capital C actually believes, but that the whole concept of faith and Christianity and being saved should come as a comfort to most people because it's an antidote to the chaos of living. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the idea that you're going to be reunited with the Creator at some point, regardless of how bad things get, should be enough mm-hmm. for the faithful.
Right.
And so a lot of them criticize Revelations because it takes a giant horror story and drops it into, you know, all this stuff you're going to have to deal with at some point, regardless of whether you're faithful or not.
Yeah.
So it's, in a discussion of Revelation, you have to be honest and be like, well, this is what is written and this is what we know and what we don't. And there's nothing in there about the rapture at all, mm-hmm. except for some of the faithful will be marked, but doesn't say what's, you know,
what's in store for them after they're marked.
Right. It doesn't say they're untouchable. It just means that they're
they'll be duly noted.
They're noted. Yeah. So I wanted to kind of amend last week because we had left that, like, I consider like a cliffhanger. Like, wait a second, what is that? So, you know, that just ended part one, and now we're going to part two of conspiracies and stuff. Because I think it matters.
Yeah.
You know. So anyway, Mark of the Beast.
Yes.
One of those major things. So many potential marks of the beast.
Yeah, people can interpret to be that part of Revelations. I mean, I've heard everything from the cards that you scan whenever you're shopping at the grocery store to chip technology in your credit card, mm-hmm. just all kinds of things.
Well, I think what happens is there is a fear of tyrannical government control. And there's a lot of stuff that's mentioned in Revelation that is possible only in a technologically advanced society. Okay? So, you say you're going to receive this mark, and without it, you're going to receive a mark either in your head or your hand. And without it, you cannot buy or sell. Well, whenever you get into a modern society where you have things like social security numbers, and at some point, you know, cash is kind of on its way out.
Yeah.
You know, digital currencies are what, and then you have this whole problem with identity theft, you know, and so you've got all your financial institutions, your corporations, and your government kind of trying to figure out a way that you are you and identified only as you.
Put a chip in you or something. Or
yeah. You know, you...
But you microchip dogs.
You microchip somebody, and then that person is who they say they are, and they can't. Which is great for commerce. It's bad for revolution. You know? So, especially if they come up with some law that says you can't do something, but then they know where you went.
Yeah.
You know, so there are a lot of what you call conspiracies that if you look at it from a logical perspective, you'd say, well, that is, you know, Bible or not, that might not necessarily be the good thing.
Good idea, right.
So, but yeah, I've heard everything from a barcode tattoo to microchipping to, I mean, there's companies now that have the microchips that, you know, you can go on YouTube and watch a video where the guy has it in his hand and he walks up to his front door and waves his hand and it pops open and turns on the lights and he can order, you know, you can turn on Alexa and order from Amazon. And
I would never allow that to happen. There's always, because going to conspiracies, I'd be worried about being able to be tracked. You can't hide out from anything. You know, you're marked.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term.
You're marked forever.
Yeah.
You know, and if you take the mark out, then you show up to the grocery store and you can't buy food.
Yeah.
Because, sorry, that old technology, we just don't have that anymore. You know, we grandfathered in some of the old folks who were nervous, but...
We don't want to be stuck behind you while you write a check anymore.
You seen Idiocracy?
I don't remember it very well, but I remember the movie.
In Idiocracy, everything's automated and all the people are stupid, and it's got Luke Wilson, and he goes to the doctor. And the doctor's like, yeah, it'll just scan the chip and it'll tell me all I need to know. And he's like, I don't have a chip. And the doctor freaks out. And he's like, you need to get a chip. So he goes down, and they ask him a question, and he's like, I'm not sure. And they name him Not Sure, and that's his name for the rest of the movie. And he's got the chip, and every time it scans it, so then they're looking for a guy called Not Sure. Everywhere he goes, it beeps and basically informs them. It sets off alarms everywhere he goes that Not Sure is here. And
okay, another one that that pops up in pop culture a lot. This is one of the few things that you often see iterations of in movies and everything, other than the famous wrestling alliance team of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. I have never heard of any conspiracies where people feel as though something in real life represents it. I don't know if you have or not.
I would say the AIDS epidemic for sure. I remember when I was a kid, so we're talking in the 80s, and the church did a whole thing on the Book of Revelation. And so the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse is basically famine, disease, war, and then death.
So yeah,
and really all four of those things are they're kind of interchangeable. Like where one is, generally the others follow. Mm-hmm. And so they were talking about the AIDS epidemic as the disease,
the plague,
and then
yeah,
looking at worldwide famine, especially in Africa in the 80s. That's two of them. And then of course we were in the Cold War, we were always on the brink of annihilation. Mm-hmm. The only one, all it would take is one simple trigger to bring all of those to bear, and then you've got all four horsemen.
Right.
Now, to be fair, those things, in all of our wars, those things run rampant. You got famine in one area, you got disease in another.
Yep.
You know, the Spanish flu after World War I killed more people than World War I did. You know, it's disease. Mm-hmm. But it ran unchecked, and sanitation was bad, and you had a whole bunch of injured and, you know, hungry people that just didn't have their resilience built up to the disease, and it just wiped out millions. So it's not hard to look if you look.
Yeah,
you know,
it's kind of like looking at Notre Dame's predictions, where you can interpret it to mean a lot. You find similarities between the predictions and stuff that actually goes on. Now, the other one that comes up all the time, it seems as though with every presidential election, the Antichrist is put into office.
Mm-hmm.
The Antichrist thing is pretty, that's one that pops up a lot.
It is. Well, and I believe the reason the Antichrist is such a pivotal figure is because he comes in as a savior.
Yeah, it's a false prophet.
He comes in as a charismatic problem solver, and pretty much gets everybody together and starts getting like all of this chaos that's going on. He kind of pulls everybody out of it. And whether that's, you know, whether it's through negotiations, you know, good leadership,
economy,
you know, good economy, however that may be, you know, ending a war or whatever. But yeah, he comes in as a beloved, not even necessarily, maybe not even religious leader, but like a world leader in some ways. And then he gets, it mentions like an assassination attempt. Basically, he gets injured badly. And then whenever he comes out of it, he's not nice anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's one of those things where any world leader, especially one with a bunch of eyes on him, is always going to be looked at with some... And I wonder if sometimes this is intentional, like outside of the religious aspect, outside of the spiritual side and actual prophecy. The Bible's full of a lot of allegory that warns you against things that are bad for you regardless, right? So you look at somebody like Hitler, for example. Okay. It's kind of a joke, and you can't even say the joke anymore. But be like, well, what about all the good things Hitler did? Because Time magazine voted him Man of the Year. He turned the economy of Germany around. He brought law and order to a lawless society and a desperate society, whose economy was completely, I mean, it wasn't even on the ropes. It was laying outside of the ring on the ground. And he turned that economy around. And he gave hope to a lot of people. And you're like, well, yeah, but he was anti-Semite. Well, true and fair enough, except everybody was back then. He was just more intense than many others. Mm-hmm. But everybody was racist. Like, there was obviously different degrees of it.
Einstein was.
You know, everybody was. It was just, it just was how people were. So he gave those people hope, and he gave them a bad guy to punch. Honestly, he started blaming things on the Jews and mm-hmm. the banking elite and all kinds of the stuff that, like, Alex Jones maybe, you know, yells about. But he was a great public speaker.
He's charismatic as hell.
Charismatic, very well loved. I mean, he won the vote democratically. You know, he won office. So there's so much that gets kind of shoved under the rug whenever you discuss Hitler, because everybody automatically goes to the Holocaust. The thing is, you've got to quote Monty Python here and be like, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. It's like you start off with some identity politics, and you start off hating these people and those people over there, and then by the time it's spiraled out of control, it's kind of too late because your structures are already built. You know, that's why you have to be ever vigilant. Well, things in the Bible warn against stuff like that, like false prophets and false gods, and don't put your faith in other people, and don't put your faith in institutions. You know, keep your eye on the prize. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that's hotly debated, but I believe it very strongly. Again, outside of faith and spiritualism, the Bible is an edict to individuality. It's your relationship yeah. with God. It's your relationship with the world and the people in it.
And the decisions you make.
And the decisions, yeah, right. And you're the only one that's answerable. It doesn't matter. If you get caught up in a mob, it's your fault for putting yourself in the situation yeah. that would get you caught up in that mob. And so there's a lot of warnings throughout the Bible about stuff like that. You know, cozying up with the Romans. But then an emperor changes and he starts burning you at the stake because he thinks it's funny. You know, like, that's probably not a good position to be in. So, you got the New World Order in there?
No, I didn't even think about that one.
That was a massive conspiracy. It's one of the first, you know, one of the links that kept popping up is the whole idea of a global New World Order, and it's conspiracy, but it also gets into like Satanism and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I mean, it gets really deep. But just the idea that you're going from a nationalist global society where all your individual countries have a national identity, and we are Norwegians and we are Japanese, and you start breaking that down to where there's no longer any kind of either cultural or social boundaries on things anymore, it opens the door for tyranny, basically.
Right.
You know, and governments, historically, they always start off good. Well, for the most part, they always start off at least philosophically beneficial, but then it's whenever they start imprisoning dissidents, and whenever you're not allowed to speak up against the government and stuff, and they start getting mad at you, and then you get disappeared into the gulags or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So anytime you put too much faith, trust, and hope in the government, which is other people, to make your life better, you're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
So the New World Order is one of those things that it's very big, very broad, very, you know, it's one of those things we can talk about in a whole episode by itself.
It's very powerful.
It's very powerful. But those are the ones that we're on guard against, so to speak. If you're mm-hmm. looking at these conspiracies, like, you kind of don't want this. You don't want all of the money consolidated into
one group.
One small group of decision makers. You don't want all of the production consolidated into one small group. You don't want to have a dedicated, you don't want to have a listed tier of society where you just are in it. And
well, it's never good to have that much, especially in it, for some reason what popped in my head was Bezos. It's a powerful man, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And his power is not dwindling, it's increasing every day.
Yeah.
Should one person have that much control over everything, man? And the thing about it is, he didn't take it. Let him have it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was given to him, you know?
Oh, certainly. And
I've always been one of the opinion that power corrupts.
It always does.
And one of the examples I give of that is the Catholic Church. You know, it's the largest, most powerful organization in the world at one time, for sure, if not still. And that power corrupts. You don't want to lose it.
Mm-mm.
You know?
And that's where you get into the discussion between, like, the tenets of religion versus, like spirituality versus dogma. It's like one of the biggest problems that ever hit Christendom was the printing press. Because whenever people could actually start reading the Bible and figuring out for themselves what it actually said,
instead of you telling them how you interpret it.
Yeah, and without the government saying, this is what it says, and this is what we expect. And people are like, wait, that doesn't say that at all. Then the church lost a lot of power, and they fought tooth and nail to keep it. But once that Pandora's box was open with the printing press, then you had philosophy, you know, you had dissidents, you had people that could argue and debate about it and what it meant and what it meant in context and stuff. So anytime you try to eke a little bit of power away from the superstructure, they get mad, and then it turns deadly.
Yeah.
it's not good.
And like I said, in just the power that Bezos is getting, you know, he may one day be compared to the Antichrist
if he starts going political.
Yeah.
Which, I mean,
it's bound to happen. That one of the reasons Donald Trump is in office right now is, you know, you get to a point where, you know, when you're that successful, powerful, and rich, where's the next step you can go? You just want to keep attaining more and more and more and more. He's president now.
True. Now, to be fair, and I'm not going to talk about Donald Trump, his personality or his politics. I really do, honestly, truly, without any kind of... I really believe that he was just like, you know what, screw it, I'll give it a shot. And whenever he started getting, like, winning approval and votes, I don't think it was really a power thing. I think it was more like you start off a race and you shouldn't win because you're overweight, but somebody trips and somebody else trips.
And you get the second win.
And you turn around and you look behind you and you're out in front. And why not keep going? Like, I remember years ago, Howard Stern was running for mayor in New York. It was a publicity stunt. But he was like, yes, I'm going to run on one issue. Road crews can only work at night. The roads have to be open during the day. We're not having road crews work during the day. And he shot ahead of, like, everybody else by, like, a 40% margin to where he had to withdraw.
Because he was like Brewster's Millions.
he was just gonna do it as a joke, you know, and kind of like, you know, win place or show somewhere. But no, it got out of hand. He's like, whoa, I don't want to actually be the mayor. I don't want to do this. But see, that's what happened to Donald Trump, and he was like, well, let's just see how far this goes.
Yeah.
Let's just see how far I can push it. And now, you know, since all of the, you know, all of the news and all of the policies and all of this Twitter and all of that stuff, I don't pay attention to it because it's all, I believe that pretty much every story is a simple story that they're blowing out of proportion, just like they did with Obama.
Yeah.
You know.
Just like they did with every president.
I was critical of a lot of Obama's policies, but I really, really felt for the guy because the poor dude could do no right. But either everything he did was perfect. Even when he did something stupid, you're like, really? And everybody's like, oh my God, that's awesome. But even when he did, like, good things, all the right people were like he's the Antichrist.
Right.
It's like, how? Like, he is an elected official. He's given a script. He's given an agenda that basically this is what we're going to do while you're in office, and your job is to kind of be the cheerleader for these things.
Yeah.
And try to push them through, get the people behind you. That's generally what a president's job yeah. is. And dude could do no right, or he could do no wrong. There was no middle ground. So what's your next conspiracy?
That's pretty much what I got. But one thing I wanted to speak to is, you know, when you read the book of Revelations, just like it's not linear, it doesn't say... Like when, let's say the plagues are released by the bowl poured out, but it doesn't say if it's like all the plagues are going to happen today, or if it's going to be over a span of a decade. You know, see, before you got here, we had a 7.3 magnitude earthquake that hit off the coast of Venezuela. I don't know if you heard about that. Mm-mm. Did a whole bunch of damage to the tsunami warnings went away, but did a whole bunch of damage to buildings and stuff in Trinidad and everything, and it was a pretty rough earthquake, but. What if that is just one of the series over the past 5 years that is signifying, you know, the earth breaking apart, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
could be. Because, like I said, it's not linear, so you don't know what the time span is with these things happening.
Well, earthquakes and volcanoes and hurricanes and tornadoes and natural disasters, they just happen.
Yeah.
I mean, they happen. That's who we are on an organic, you know... living planet that
it changes,
that shifts and moves and changes. Cool. And we talked about last week when Krakatoa blew, it changed climate globally for years.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about ice ages and glaciers and stuff like that, and, you know, you look at the western United States and realize that was like the Grand Canyon used to just be a river.
It was
just a river, but there's all those all that land that was revealed by melting glaciers and all of that stuff. And you have to wonder, like, well, are we better off now after what is essentially cataclysmic
occurrences,
or did it open up more land for farming and we were able to actually expand our depth and breadth of life on Earth? Sure, it certainly wasn't good for the people who lived through it,
yeah.
when it happened, you know. they say that, like, as one of those little asides, like, a little bit of global warming might not actually be a bad thing, because it just makes the season shorter in the north, so that you can farm longer.
Yeah.
Make more food. Like, again, not getting deep into that, but there's always a yin and a yang to everything.
Yeah.
So, and if you're pushing real hard to one side, you don't notice what might happen on the other. But yeah, I always get the thing where it's like God he destroyed everybody in the flood, then he sent up the rainbow as a sign that says he's never going to destroy everybody with a flood again. He doesn't say you're not going to destroy everybody,
but just he's not going to use a flood as his tool of destruction.
But in Revelation, it's done by fire.
Uh-huh.
When at any point in history has it been available to annihilate everybody on the planet with fire, except in like the last 80 years?
Yeah.
So that's a big one. Because that's been close a couple of times.
Yeah.
And you can guarantee that if that horseman rides, all those others are going to come with it. You know, because it also, Revelation says that 75% of the people are going to die. Well, how else are you going to do that? You know? So there is that final little piece in the puzzle that's like, well, it possibly couldn't have happened before, but it can happen now.
Yeah.
We couldn't have a mark of the beast before. You could have it geographically. You could have it regionally and even nationally, but you couldn't have it globally. You can now.
Mm-hmm.
little things like that make you kind of like,
Yeah. makes you think what's actually going on. You know, is there some credence to all this?
But see, then there's also the, like, with the New World Order and sort of like the Zionists and stuff, and the, not Jews, but the conspiracy of the Zionists, that essentially there are shadow governments and stuff that are attempting to make this stuff happen in order to gain control. They're trying to push that lever into chaos so that they, you know, so then the wealthy
can
elites
step in
step in and take over. And it's got nothing to do with God doing it. It's like, oh, well, the book says all this stuff's going to happen. We've got the ability to do it. Let's just do it. And then we
just press the reset button and take over.
Yeah, we can just do that.
Which, scary thoughts, man.
It kind of worries me sometimes, because I think about World War I sometimes and World War II, although they did happen very close together. And you look at where the world was in, you know, 1912, basically. Very up-and-coming technologically. All of the powers of Europe were all cousins with each other. They were all cousins. You know? They all knew each other. They didn't really have a whole lot of enmity towards one another.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder sometimes if these giant cataclysmic wars are actually orchestrated for the point of population control. Because you think, okay, well, if World War I, for example, the assassination of the Archduke of Austria was a trigger, but there had been other triggers before. Why this one? Why did that one push the domino? The reality was there were so many alliances and stuff, and Germany didn't like France, and they wanted some land from France. But they couldn't go straight into France, so they went through Belgium. Germany going into Belgium is what really triggered World War I. That's what brought Britain in. And when Britain was in, that they were allied with the United States, right? If all of those people hadn't died, and all of them had two or three kids, the population explosion that we had in the baby boom would have been like quadrupled.
Mm-hmm.
In just normal everyday life. So World War I kind of hit a reset button by annihilating the populations of so many industrialized larger nations.
Mm-hmm.
World War II took out a significant chunk of the Russian population and all of those Balkan countries as well. Japan, China, all of these very populous nations lost millions and millions and millions of people.
Right.
What if it was orchestrated for that very purpose? Not God and country, but population control.
Yeah. Or a test run to see just how much destruction they could do.
Well, there's that, too.
For future use.
That's almost more evil, just to see what your weapon can do. But if you're thinking about it in terms of, like, you know, habitat control, it's almost scarier.
Yeah.
So anyway, probably in that one, it's a little
dark there.
Dark spot to land on, but I don't know. What do you think? Have you ever read the End Times prophecies? It was interesting to read about. Interesting to kind of put them with some current events and things like that.
Yeah, it, just like I used to love reading about Nostradamus, and it's the same thing, just seeing how you can interpret it in different ways, you know.
The man who saw tomorrow.
I used to love watching those documentaries about him where they interpret his predictions with modern occurrences and stuff. You know, it's all the way to the World Trade Center attacks. They actually brought that in, that Nostradamus predicted that.
Yeah. Or did he?
Or did he?
That's the thing. You can't really tell. You can just... Anyway, we'll get into Nostradamus in a future episode.
Yeah.
That's fun.
When I was a kid, like, I was really into Nostradamus when I was young. Because it amazed me to think that... That was also during my Faces of Death period and everything, too, so...
Well, Well, all right, guys, that's it for another episode of Scary Dad. We will be back next week with our 100th episode.
Yay!
And or not, we'll definitely
it's gonna
be here.
The 100th episode, one way or another.
it may or may not be
special.
Special. It might be a very special episode instead of a very, very special episode. Anyway, guys, keep it scary.
Later. Why does my heart go on beating?